W-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Nope. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a Kings of Anglia podcast episode. Wow, it's been a little while since we've had one of these. We've been able to bring you quite a lot in the off-season. We've gone, I think it's been 2 weeks since our last one of these. We've done the boxing, we've had KOA specials, and now Mark Keith and Ross Halls have gone away. So you're stuck with me, Alex Jones, here in the hot seat today to talk you through some of the latest news that we've had in what should be a quiet period, but as you'll hear in a bit, the football never stops. I'm joined by Stuart Watson. Stu, first of all, how are you?
Very well, thank you. You're right, it never stops, does it? Remarkably, we get the fixtures next week. Feels like the season's only just finished. Transfer window, Club World Cup, European Under-21 Championships. I bloody love football, but there's too much of it, Alex. Yep. Far too much of it. But we shouldn't complain, given the industry we're in.
No, we shouldn't complain at all, but it does feel like it is all of the football, all of the time. The show goes on, the transfer window opened, then it's shut again. Now it's open again. Ipswich Town haven't signed anyone yet. There's lots of rumours for us to get into. We've had some departures, and I guess that's probably the best place to start, because we've seen Liam Delaps left. We've had Marcus Harness, who's moved on. But the most recent one of those is Cameron Burgess. And I guess that's the one that fans have feared, because he's been out of contract and because there are natural question marks over a lot of interest. We've reported different rumours that we've seen from across Europe to in Spain for Girona and Valencia. We've also had Rangers who've reportedly been interested. And he has indeed left Portman Road. He has moved on, which is a real shame. And it's probably comes as a bit of a surprise to see that he's gone to Championship rivals. He's at Swansea City. So, Stu, I know that you've kind of, well, more than anything, you've followed Cameron Burgess's time at Ipswich Town from start to finish. But how do you see this move from all perspectives, from Ipswich's perspective, from Cameron Burgess's perspective? What are your kind of main thoughts on it?
I think the natural first reaction of everyone was surprise. That's not Valencia. That was your WhatsApp message to me when it got announced. And I think that was pretty much all of our reactions. When we mentioned the clubs that you've mentioned, I think people got their head around the fact that, fair enough, if Cameron Burgess wants to go and play football at clubs of that stature, then reluctantly, people would swallow it. But the fact that he's gone to a Championship rival, a Championship club that have had a series of mid-table finishes over the last 3-4 seasons, brought a bit of shock value to start with. Then when that surprise sort of settles down, I think there's a bit of disappointment and a frustration that Ipswich are losing a player that has been integral to the back-to-back promotions. There's always going to be an extra bit of emotion attached to those sort of players because of, you know, the era. We've seen it with Massimo leaving already. Every time one of those players leaves, there's going to be a tinge of sadness and an extra bit of emotion. And then, as I say, sort of a bit of disappointment, frustration that I think people feeling that actually he'd still do a very good job in the Championship last season. He helped Ipswich get promoted last time around. He was ready whenever called upon in the Premier League. He actually started in 3 of the 4 Premier League wins last season. So disappointment that he's been allowed to leave for free. So I get all of that. And then when you let all those emotions simmer down and you take a step back from it, in a piece I've written today, I do see the logic behind it from all perspectives. Where should we start? Should we look at it from Ipswich Town's perspective, first of all, why they might not have, or why they haven't been able to tie Cameron to a new contract? let's rewind to last summer. First of all, I guess the first argument will be, shouldn't have let it get to this point, should have offered him a new contract this time last year. But as a club that had just got promoted back to back into the Premier League, I think there's probably some valid thinking to think, let's not box ourselves into a corner here. We've got to see how Cameron Burgess does in the Premier League. So I think it was probably right not to rush into something last year and see how things panned out. Is that fair to say?
I'd say so, yeah. And I think that's probably got to be the smart approach for any player that has made the jump up in the way that Cameron Burgess have. And there is kind of a group there at Ipswich, isn't there? Players who have predominantly played lower league football, then have come up League One into the Championship, into the Premier League. And Town, coming into last season, were in a position where they wanted to go and become an established Premier League team. And I think with that, you have to think very, very carefully about the way that you approach contracts for players and essentially looking too far ahead when there's so much transition going on. So from Ipswich's perspective, I don't think that it was necessarily the wrong move to not have instigated those talks earlier, just because there was kind of so much in the balance at that point. I believe it's been the last few months, hasn't it, that they've kind of been in those contract talks. And then it's been about trying to find the right balance for what works for Ipswich and what works for Cameron Burgess. And all parties have to be happy with that. And I guess one of the major kind of cogs in that needs to keep spinning is the shiny new signing from last season, the player who was in the Championship team of the season in 2023-24. One of the players who, when signed, and has been for a long time, been regarded as one of the most exciting young prospects in his position. There are very few that tick all of those boxes that Jacob Greaves does. So factor all those things together, and it kind of felt that it was, I don't want to say doomed to fail from the start, but there were so many hurdles to overcome. Those are the big ones, definitely from Ipswich's perspectives, that stand out for me.
Yeah, so from an Ipswich Town point of view, from my understanding, they offered him a very competitive financial package. It was a two-year contract offer on the table. And as you said, and as Kieran McKenna has alluded to, those talks started months ago. It's not like something that was just picked up at the end of the season. In a press conference in April, Kieran McKenna says, you know, we'd like him to stay. We think he can be an important member of the squad next season, but we appreciate he has to explore his options. So Ipswich put on the table what they felt was right for them. Would Ipswich fans want the club to be offering more than 2 years to Cameron Burgess, who's 29, 30, who has risen the leagues? And we're talking now about Ipswich as a club. The goalposts have moved in terms of ambition. This is now Championship favourites next season. The plan is to get back up and stay up. So if you'd have had Cameron Burgess heading into, you know, if you're talking about year three of a three-year contract and where Ipswich we hope they would be in 3 years' time, you've then got to be mindful of not sort of being tied to contracts that you don't want to be tied to. So Ipswich tried to get that balance right in terms of retaining a player that absolutely could have a big role to play in the short term, but not putting themselves in a bit of a corner for the longer term as well. So I think it was a fair contract offer that had been made, and an understandable one that had been made from an Ipswich point of view. Reasons why Cameron Burgess wouldn't take that: he's 29, he's played lower league football for most of his career, someone that didn't quite make it at Fulham, has then had to sort of clamber his way up through League Two, League One. You know, it's only the last couple of years that he's been playing at this sort of top level of the game. So I absolutely understand why he'd want to make the most of this last big contract that he's got. I think people always underestimate the length of contract, especially for older players. And, you know, he refers to sort of his family and his goodbye message on social media. And so a little bit of protection for his family in what is a short career, some guaranteed income over 3 years. But I would think the most important thing is the chance to play regular football in a World Cup year. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Australia have qualified for the World Cup in the USA next summer. How many players get to say they've played at a World Cup? And Cameron Burgess has to give himself the absolute best possible chance of playing every week and being in pole position to be in that squad and to start games at a World Cup next summer. So Ipswich can't guarantee that. They can say to him, look, you've got every chance. It's a fair fight for you to get in that left-sided centre-half role. And, you know, as you've seen last season, you've still started 16 games in the Premier League. You can get in, you can stay in. But the reality is, he knows, for all of that Jacob Greaves was signed for £15 million and Ipswich will want to build up their asset. And I know people will have sort of derided that and say, oh, Ipswich almost have forced themselves to back their player that they've spent a lot of money on. Of course they are. That's the name of the game. If you spend money on a player, you have to give yourself the best possible chance of developing that asset. And it sounds very cold and calculated when you talk about players as assets, but that's the game we're in now. Ipswich haven't been able to trade players for profit for quite some time, and they have to give themselves the best possible chance of developing these players they've spent a bit of money on. Is there much between Burgess and Greaves at this moment in time, based on last season's evidence? Probably not. And I can understand why some people are saying, actually, Cameron Burgess is a better centre-half. At this moment in time, possibly. More experienced, more embedded in the team, more relationships with people like Leif Davis, etc., etc. But Jacob Greaves has got the higher ceiling. No one can dissuade me otherwise. He's 24. He's been in Championship Team of the Year. He's played tons of football for his age. There's some remarkable similarities with Harry Maguire, who, sold to Leicester for a similar amount of money, and then look what he's gone on to do. So Ipswich have to give themselves the best possible chance of developing Greaves. And, it wasn't the most stellar debut season for Jacob Greaves, but there's reasons behind that. It's his first season of Premier League football. It's new teammates. It's an injury early doors to his hamstring that he had to come back from. I'm not too keen on some of the shade that's kind of been thrown Jacob Greaves' way following this Cameron Burgess announcement. I have to say the two things don't have to be connected, but there you go. As I said in the piece this morning, celebrate Cameron Burgess, but it's important to get behind Jacob Greaves now as well and move forwards, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing for me. And I think that Jacob Greaves, despite last season, and I don't think it was a bad season by any means, when I was going through and ranking the players that I did with my full list after the season ended, he was still quite near to the top. And you know, you can say what you want about the season as a whole impacting that, but there's still been plenty of games, I think, probably either side of the seasons at the start before the injury, and the latter stages when he was playing at left back did excellent, and right towards the end of the campaign, where I thought he was really, really good. And then having another full pre-season to build into a campaign in a league where he's already shown he can be one of the best centre-backs at the level, then I think that kind of run of consistency at this football club can really do him the world of good. And there's a reason why there were so many top teams interested in Jacob Greaves last season. There's a reason why he cost £15 million. There's a reason why he was in the team of the season in the Championship. All of these things, they all add up. And one campaign like last season, which wasn't necessarily a bad campaign, I don't think wipes all of that clean. And this is, as you say, it's the nature of football, isn't it? And you always have to keep looking ahead and looking ahead. And Jacob Greaves in that position will definitely, I think, really step into it. And then we could easily be in the same position in 2-3 years' time, where Jacob Greaves has interest from a top team after X amount of seasons and he goes and moves on and we're all disappointed. And then it's about getting behind the next player, and it's all cyclical, isn't it, at the end of the day? It's hard to kind of take the emotions out of it. Yeah, that's probably how I see it. And I know that this summer in particular, is going to be difficult because there will be departures. People were hurt when Mass went. People were hurt when Marcus Harness moved on to Huddersfield Town. People hurt with Cameron Burgess. Axel Tuanzebe will be another one if he turns down the Ipswich Town contract offer. Haven't seen a lot of rumours, to be perfectly honest, when it comes to Axel Tuanzebe, despite the fact I would imagine there is going to be quite a bit of interest in him. But we did get one yesterday, would have been Monday, which was Trabzonspor. That one came from a Turkish sports newspaper called Fanatic, saying that they're interested in taking Axel on a free transfer. Kind of been signed off by the manager that they're happy to approach him, and the manager there sees him as a centre-back, interestingly, rather than the right-back. Obviously, centre-back is a position that he's played before. With Axel, then, two questions. One, what is the gut feeling now? I feel like we've spoken about the gut feeling with him, and I think we're probably in the same boat with it. But coming into this position, how are you feeling? And secondly, Trabzonspor. Know too much about them? Would that seem like an interesting move from his perspective? There's got to be lots of options on the table.
Where shall we start? Turkey, in terms of a choice of destination, I think is fraught with danger. I think recent history suggests there's a lot of players who've gone over there and there's been issues with paying players and things like that. And so... Yeah, I'm not personally sure that would be the best move for his career at this moment in time. If he was to get a Premier League club interested in him, I would absolutely understand why he feels like he's done enough to stay in the Premier League. How would I feel about him leaving? It would be a major blow, Axel. I would rank it above Cameron's departure. I'm sad about Cameron leaving. Not just because of the nostalgia of what he's done, but also what he could do next season. The Championship is 46 games, all your cup matches. If you look back at the Championship promotion season last time, it's easy to forget that there were times when, you know, there were midweek games where Kieran kind of rotated in George Edmondson for sort of bespoke game plans where he felt that bit of pace was needed. And next season would have been, I think, the same with Cameron Burgess. There would have been certain matches where you think they've got a big striker, strong in the air, bit of an aerial bombardment today. I would have seen him suddenly parachuting Cameron Burgess in, you know, after 5-6 games out, just suddenly plonking him back in the team and him doing a really good job, because as we know, Cameron's ready whenever called upon. But there is Jacob Greaves there. Liam Delap, there is George Hurst there, who we feel and hope that can step in. With Axel Tuanzebe, a little bit different. I think he was one of Ipswich's better performers last season. Would have been even higher up in those discussions if it wasn't for that unfortunate injuries that came his way. He's someone that I think could sort of carry Ipswich, you know, could stay and remain a sort of key player in terms of his athleticism being suited to the Premier League. So I'm still hopeful that something can be thrashed out with him, that Ipswich can say, look, we were the ones that backed you when you were, you know, at the depths of your injury despair with your back problems and you weren't able to get games. We got you in on the free transfer. We've built you up. We've got you fairly robust again up until that, you know, thumb injury and the hamstring problems that come. And make him feel wanted and a key part of the leadership group and all that sort of stuff. The position thing is interesting. You say about the Turkey report saying centre-back. When I've done a lengthy interview with Axel before, he definitely sees himself as more of a centre-half than a right-back. He's happy to play right-back. He made his debut, I think, for Manchester United at right-back against Alexis Sanchez, I think, marking him for Arsenal. Back in the day. So he's played a bit of both throughout his career. So whether that's something that's in his mind, he sees Dara O'Shea's got that sort of right-sided centre-half role kind of locked down at the moment, and whether that's something he kind of doesn't want to get pigeonholed as a right-back going forwards at Ipswich, I don't know. But that would be a pretty significant blow, I would say, if Ipswich can't keep Axel, because right-back options beyond him are then Harry Clark, returning from loan at Sheffield United. yes, he's been part of the promotion winning team from the Championship, but better going forwards than defensively, and has come off the back of a sort of an injury hit season. So big ask for him to hit the ground running. Ben Johnson, experienced Premier League right back, but was rarely used there in the Premier League by Kieran McKenna. He was kind of used more as a wing back and a right winger. So I don't know if Kieran's got doubts about him playing as an out and out right back and whether that might change a level lower. I don't know. But yeah, for me, it would be a big blow to lose Axel.
I think one of the hardest things with Axel as well is it's such a unique role, isn't it? And I talk about kind of having key characteristics. There aren't many players who I think can do what Axel can do, which is the pace, the strength, and the 1v1 defending. And that's potentially what surprised me a little bit about the centre-back talk, where how many times has Axel Tuanzebe kept the top-class winger quiet? And that always comes back to me with Brighton and Hertzler talking about how he kept Mitoma quiet in that game last season. But there's quite a lot of times where I've looked at, especially with the player ratings, looked at Axel's performances and thought, I don't really remember what he's done. But then the winger he's been up against hasn't done anything either. And he can really go under the radar in terms of what he does. It's not always these incredible defensive, resilient performances. He gets the job done, and he's done it against some incredible players. With that in mind, you probably wouldn't blame him for taking a attractive offer that comes to him. I'd imagine that there's every chance on a free transfer, as we've said. Premier League interest could be there, international interest as well. Trabzonspor, a team that finished seventh in the Turkish League last year, won't be playing in Europe. I guess there's always that part to say that reports, A, internationally, and B, from Turkey as well, aren't always reliable, aren't always something that we can trust. And moves that happen can easily come out of the blues. We've seen with Cameron Burgess, No reports about him going to Swansea before he actually did. It was all talks about Spain and Scotland. So that's definitely one to keep an eye on. There's only a few more days now, a couple of weeks really, until he will be formally out of contract. But definitely there's going to be those talks ongoing. Talking about rumours, should we go through some of the rumour mill bits and pieces that we've seen? I can rattle through some of them. Some of them, as you might understand, with the way that we've done our rumour roundups, can come, let's not call them nonsense, but are interesting rumours, should we say. Sammy Smodic's one that we've seen linked with a whole load of clubs. That one came from Sports Boom. We've linked him with Wolves, Everton, West Ham. He is a West Ham fan, saying that Ipswich would let him go if the price is right, 10 to 15 million. Don't see this as making much sense from Ipswich's perspective, for sure, seeing the goal record that he has at Championship level, even with his age. I can understand maybe why he might want to see his future at Premier League, but probably don't see this one happening.
Ipswich players will have taken pay cuts with relegation. Mm-hmm. Every club puts clauses into these contracts. Mark Ashton has made it pretty clear that was non-negotiable with signing players last year, that they had to take relegation clauses, and hence why they weren't able to get some more experienced players, because they weren't willing to accept those clauses. So these players will have dropped, I don't know, 20, 30, 40, 50%. I don't know what the average will be, but they'll have all taken some significant drops to their money. There will be contract talks going on in the background with some players. Dar O'Shea's one at the moment, where you want to then retain players. Mark Ashton has talked about retention being a big part of this summer. That has a knock-on effect. If one or two players sign a new contract, therefore negating their hefty pay cut that they've just had, then others naturally will feel like maybe they want to negotiate something as well. And that's maybe where you get some of these kind of stories talking of interest and links elsewhere. I would suggest trying to join the dots with my cynical journalism hat on there, that there may be an element of that at play at times.
Yeah, I'd definitely say so. And I mean, without trying to join the dots too much more, there will be rumours where you see player X is linked to this club, this club, this club, this club, and this club. And usually it's more than three or four. you can kind of guess where those kind of stories are coming from. Should we do a bit more fun stuff? Because this is a bit depressing, I think, talking about all the potential departures. But we need to touch on the midfield. And the midfield needs a revamp. And Kieran McKenna has spoken about the need for change because we've had some big departures. And even Sam Morsey said, look, at the end of the day, this is going to be what's going to happen over the summer because we've seen Calvin Phillips has gone. Massimo Luongo's gone. Jens Kajusta, for now, has gone. I guess Jens is probably the best one to start with. I believe that we've not spoken on podcast since you've spoken to Mark Ashton about Jens Kajusta, the potential for a return. We've seen a couple of rumours about a £10 million loan obligation to buy. We've seen bits of them apparently being offered to Ajax. Ajax reporters don't think there's anything in that one. Let's keep this within Ipswich Town, though. You've spoken to Mark Ashton. Negotiations kind of are there and talks about what could be with Jens next season essentially has to be right for all parties, doesn't it?
Yep. He started the final day of the season. The only lone player that did, Kieran McKenna sort of said, oh, we left Julio and Ciso out because we wanted to go with the players that are going to be here next season, which made our ears prick up. Well, Jens played today. Kieran, does that mean there's a chance? And he said, well, you know, I've said it lots of times. We'd love to have him back, but there's probably a lot of work to do on that front. Mark Ashton then picks up the baton in his interview with us a few days later, asked about Jens, just said dialogue continues, but essentially it's well publicised that he's got these knee issues. Brentford pulled the plug at a medical stage last summer. It took the best part of half a season for Ipswich to kind of build him up to a level before he was able to complete 90-minute matches. I think that was kind of the other side of Christmas before he was doing that and where he was able to start sort of playing back-to-back games on sort of within the space of a few days, things like that. So I think if it wasn't for those issues, left out of some Sweden squads as well, just for kind of managing that issue. So if it wasn't for those issues, I think Ipswich would have no chance at all because his performance levels towards the back end of the season almost certainly get him a move to a top-tier football club somewhere in Europe. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. Those issues give Ipswich a chance of getting him back, but Ipswich also have to protect themselves in terms of not overstretching financially on someone who could break down further down the line. You know, when I spoke to him, I can't remember when that interview was, mid-season, he felt like he was in a really good place and he was learning how to manage his body. But again, it's not always just about the quality of the player and the impact that they can have in the next few months. As we've discussed with Cameron Burgess, as a football club, you have to think beyond the short term. So, yeah, long story short, deal will need to be right for all parties and talks continue.
Yeah, I think with Jens, my biggest concern is definitely a championship football season because we know how brutal they are and we know that he can break down physically. We know about the knee issues, you said, and playing Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday, you might go Saturday, Saturday and then play the following midweek. It's rigorous. It's really challenging and really demanding. And players enjoy it and they like doing it. And you can tell, actually speaking to a lot of them who made the step up from the Championship into the Premier League, they like the Championship schedule better. But from a physical perspective, that would be my biggest fear with Jens Kajusta. And that's why absolutely it is a case where I think the deal has to be right because he's not going to be able to play Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday, do 90 minutes across the board. So
we don't know. It might be better for him. Maybe that's what he needs. Maybe he needs the rhythm of games. And the Premier League was, there was a lot of injuries for Ipswich last season. And maybe that's because the schedule was slower. There was fewer games that players don't like, as you say, going 2 weeks between a game. And then you've got a real decision to make in terms of how intense the training schedule is. You know, if it's I think Kieran McKenna's instinct is, well, if we've got a block of training here, let's be really intense and keep it high, which can have its drawbacks. Or equally, if you taper everything right back, you're not having players at the level that they require. Whereas there's less decisions to make in the Championship. It looks after itself. It's play, recover, play. who knows? Maybe that's what Jens Kajusta needs. Maybe, as you say, there's a risk associated with that, but Ipswich have to take all of that into account. But yeah, as long as the deal's right, I think we'd all love to see him back, wouldn't we? Seeing what he's managed to do in the Premier League, he could be outstanding in the Championship.
Yeah, I think there's a strong belief he'd be one of the best players from a technical perspective, and just what he's able to do both on and off the ball, fantastic. And I think as long as he has the right kind of midfield support network there, if it is a case where he needs to come in and out, that there are other midfielders who could step in. We've got Sam Morsey, we've got Jack Taylor. Others have been linked, touch on a couple of them. One of them is Lewis Travis. Remember him? Wow, from the Championship promotion season, came in midway through, did the job, helped Town get up, didn't play an awful much, but he did what he needed to do. Lots of rumours with Lewis Travis in terms of Championship interest. Wrexham are one of the big players in that one. Wrexham Insider have said that there's interest there, and that Sheffield United, Birmingham City, Derby County have seen links as well, and Town have interest within that. Again, as I say, when there's multiple clubs linked, it can feel quite agent-driven. And with Travis, there are talks at Blackburn about getting another deal over the line for him to stay there. Apparently available 2 to 3 million. Not sure if he'd be the kind of player that you'd want to see back at Ipswich, whether you feel it'd be the right fit. I'm not
What's
necessarily
his contract situation, Alex? Was he kind of week in, week out starter for Blackburn last season? Captain? Was his? Yeah,
he's been brought back into the fold at the moment with oh my god, who's manager there at the moment? Ex West Brom Barnsley. Valerian Ismail. There we go. Got there in the end. Ever since Yondell Thomason's kind of departure, there was a bit of a rift there, but he came back in, has worked under Valerian Ismail in the last few weeks. It was John Eustace before then. I believe he's got a contract that runs until next summer, and that's why there's talks about trying to tie him down. But those talks, obviously, with where he's at in his career and supposed interest, means that they have to be very careful with what that next step is. As we said, reported interest from top teams at the level, from an Ipswich Town perspective, definitely not a player who would come in and be a week-in, week-out starter, which would have to be a thought process there. But he knows the football club, doesn't he?
Knows the club, he knows the division, and it can't all be about young players for the future, and the Championship is demanding, as we know, and you need some bite, you need some leadership. And Lewis Travis, from, you know, briefly what we saw of him, certainly brings that. I would imagine he's going to be wanting to have more of a guarantee of playing every week, even if Sam Morsey were to leave, and that's a big old if at the moment. Would Ipswich see him as the level to start every week in a team that should be challenging for the top two? Don't know. I didn't watch him closely enough last season to kind of know where he's at, but I would certainly snap your hand off to have him in as a kind of a squad midfielder, someone to, you know, to for a rotation option to call upon again when needed, and be a good behind the scenes guy. But I would imagine he's looking for a little bit more than that.
If you would snap your hand off for him to come in as a squad rotation player, what would you do for Burnley's Josh Brownhill? Someone who has played regularly, Championship level, numerous seasons in the Premier League. He is out of contract this summer, and there are talks going on between him and Burnley. There are other interested parties. West Ham have been heavily linked, and Alan Nixon has now put Town into that mix, despite the fact there's been that switch. Town have come down, Burnley have gone up. Would be available on a free, coming into midfield in a league that he is absolutely bossed, occasionally playing further forward, also having a more defensive role in that kind of double pivot. He's got an incredible goal return for a midfielder, even from when he's been playing in a more advanced role. It does feel like a very difficult kind of deal to get done, and we need to see again whether this be agent driven with him trying to get a new deal at Burnley and other interests. But 18 goals, 6 assists in the second tier last year, 29 years old. Josh Brownhill, your thoughts on potential interest from Ipswich there?
Yeah, I mean, this would be I guess, the Sam Morsy replacement. I think that would you would have to get a player of his stature and experience. You'd have to be saying, look, you're coming in to be a main man in midfield. I think he would be in that sort of right side of the double pivot role. He ticks a lot of McKenna boxes in terms of his ex-Man United kid. He's played, I'm just having a look at it now, 400 plus career games, sort of spread almost evenly across Championship and Premier League. So he's someone that you think you could carry back up to the Premier League as well going forwards. And he's out of contract, you say, Alex, is that right?
Yeah, out of contract this summer, obviously at 29, with no kind of option to trigger an extension. He can leave for free if that doesn't get agreed. Burnley are in talks. I think that's widely reported. And West Ham are one of those teams interested. Again, at 29, he has to now start thinking about the financial side and the long-term future, what the contract length is on the table from Burnley. All of these things we've spoken about with Cameron Burgess.
Yeah, in reverse, basically. Yeah. So, you know, Ipswich might be able to go, yes, you could get something. You know, Burnley might at 29 offer you 2 years and a Premier League club might offer you this. Actually, we'll offer you 3 years and you can be one of the main men. And could be a sort of a Burgess situation in reverse. That's how, as a club that's maybe a level below or slightly below, you know, other options. There's a lot of things that come into play in terms of game time, contract length, all those sort of things. So, and, you know, there's not a transfer fee associated with it as well. So, that one floats my boat, Alex. I would imagine there's a lot of work to be done there, but I can see the link.
Yeah, I'd say so. Captain the club to promotion, has captained the club to a league title, and Town has spent so long recruiting from below, and I think it's a strategy that works, especially in the Premier League. But if you're able to go out and attract a player from the division above, that would be a real statement. So that's really it for kind of the transfer rumours on the player side. We'll come to another one in a bit, but strikers.
It's important to before we move on, to replace some of that leadership void as well. You know, we've talked about Massimo Luongo leaving, Cameron Burgess leaving. It's not all just, as I've said before, about signing these sort of young, exciting players that can be developed and sold potentially for big profit further down the line. There needs to be that sort of glue and that balance in terms of experience and leadership and personality. And a few little voids there to be filled. So some of the players that we've been mentioning there, would be able to do that.
It's an aspect that goes under the radar for sure. And I think that we can't ignore signing players who are maybe outside of the ideal McKenna bracket of kind of 26 and under, really. Going against that, then. Strikers. Not really been too many links. We've seen the odd one. We've spoken about Marc Guiu at Chelsea and the potential kind of return deal for what happened with Liam Delap. Could Town get a striker from Chelsea to kind of balance that one out?
I thought you meant getting Liam Delap back. I thought you meant a return deal for him. Yeah, plays at the Club World Cup and we'll have him back on loan. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll be fine. based on last night's performance, I don't think he'll be playing in the Championship next season, but we can touch on that one in a bit. We've got Divine Mbama is another one who's been linked, but again, not too many. I've done my list of potential transfer targets. I've totally ignored all the rumours because it's boring writing about players that have already been linked. I've tried to go down a different route. I've picked out 8, and I know right now that you're getting that article up. And I'm going to ask you the question. Well, 2 questions, but let's start with one first. Stu,
yes.
What names on my list stand out? Are there any that you really think gets the juices flowing?
The one that I would really like is one that I don't think is going to be in reach, judging by sort of latest reports, and that's Will Asula at Newcastle, who came on at St James's Park in the second half of the season, scored that brilliant centre forwards header, almost Alan Shearer-esque, in front of the Geordie faithful. Someone who's played in the Championship for Sheffield United. Could Ipswich get him, you know, on loan? He had very restricted game time. When you've got Alexander Isak, it's always going to be difficult to get minutes for Newcastle. You've got Callum Wilson as well. Don't know what his situation is going to be this summer, but he's tearing it up at the under 21s Euros for Denmark at the moment. So, and the word from Newcastle is that, you know, they will be blocking any loan move, and they'll want to give him some more game time and develop him in-house next season. So he would have been the one that I would have quite liked, but I don't think that's likely. Beyond that, like everyone, I'm a sucker for a exotic yes. foreign name from a lower league abroad. That
Ollie McBurney.
Yeah, that was the one that's kind of got that people have latched onto that are not so yeah. keen on that list. So I won't dwell too much on Ollie McBurney, but I think I said in Twitter to you, the fact that you sat down and watched an entire La Liga 2 playoff game yeah. Intrigued me. So tell me about the man that stood out for you in that match.
Yeah, this is a fun one. So I went round to a friend's house, a friend called Connor. He made a really nice curry. And we found out that, well, we were looking for some football to watch. There wasn't really a lot on. They had the La Liga 2 playoff game. And he said, you know what? I'll buy a La Liga TV subscription so we can sit and watch it. My God, was it worth it? 3-3 draw, the craziest own goal right at the death to make it 3-3. Brilliant. And Joaquin Panicelli, wow. Bet whoever's listening to this has never heard of him, at least before I wrote this. Now, I like doing bizarre transfer rumours. We had our 6'7" Italian striker Lorenzo Lucca last summer. Ultimately, he didn't sign, but he has been brilliant in Italy since then. And I think Joaquin Panicelli is someone who could kind of follow that same pattern. He's a young striker from Argentina. He's 22, so plenty of room to develop. And in the second tier in Spain, on loan from Deportivo Alaves, 20 goals, 4 assists. He got 3 assists in this game, in this playoff game. Real goal scorer, got that physical edge, but the way that he drops into deep areas, links up play. I would look up from my phone sometimes and I'd see him like in this kind of deep right wing role, and he was picking up the ball and driving it forward. And I loved the bit of that. He fit the physical profile. He did a little bit of everything. Would he be affordable? Would he be feasible? I have absolutely no idea. But I'd love to see him in an Ipswich Town shirt. So that was definitely one that stood out to me. I want to touch on a couple more, and then I'll see if there's any others that stand out to you. We'll move on from there. Richard Kone is an interesting one, and I think that he'll be a mover this summer. And I think that for the price bracket, he's someone that would fall definitely into kind of a feasible figure for Ipswich to look at this summer. And he was one that I thought possibly they could have had a look at in January. It is a big step up. He is had the most incredible background. He was born in the Ivory Coast, came to England to play at the Homeless World Cup in 2019, then started playing for Athletic Newham. That was in the Essex Senior League. I don't even know what step that is. I think it's step 8 or 9. It's really low down. 88 goals and 109 appearances at that level. Earned himself a move to Wickham. Been excellent in League One after some trials at Colchester, an unnamed Premier League club as well. 21, he's had bids rejected for him in January from Luton, worth up to about £7 million. Wickham didn't go up, though, and he's got to have some aspirations of playing at a high level. Has all the right physical attributes. Is not, in my eyes, a top-end championship week-in, week-out starter, but having him alongside George Hurst and Hashim Ali would probably still be at the club. We'll have to wait and see with him. That, to me, that is a signing I would really, really like. And I'm going to quickly come in and defend my Ollie McBurney pick, just to kind of round off my side of this one. Ipswich are in a position where they are not going to be able to attract the top strikers. They want to bounce back to the Premier League. And it means that you can't always be thinking about the long term. And if Town can bounce back and be a Premier League team next summer, they might want to use some of their very sizable funds to go and target a top end striker, a Liam Delap style player. Ollie McBurney would not be that kind of player. He would be someone who would look to get away from Spain if he's decided that Las Palmas' journey there is over. At 29, I think he is, you know, he's not necessarily going to have a huge ceiling by any means. at the same time, he's got 13 goals in his last championship season. He's won promotion from this level quite a lot of times. And adding that level of experience and questions about the personality, fine, but that's not really necessarily put Kieran McKenna off that many times before. We've seen players come in with question marks over them in the past. I think would definitely be an option. So that was kind of the thinking there. Again, the big thing, and I repeat this all the time, is physical profile when it comes to the striker. And McBurnie would be the one for me there. Any others then, Stu, on the list or in general that stand out to you that I haven't mentioned that you think would work as a quote-unquote Liam Delap replacement?
I don't want to give away too much of this list. I want people to subscribe and to go and read this because you've got some gems. I'm going to read out some other names and I'm going to let people go away and subscribe and read this and have a thought because I like it when there's a name that's come from nowhere and then I read what you've had to say and I see the logic and I think he'll do for me just based on a few of your musings. We've got Mihailo Ivanovic from Millwall in the Championship from last season. Then we're getting into some of the more exotic ones. We've got Martin Kars, who's been playing in Bundesliga 2, an Ajax Academy graduate. That's all I'm going to give you on him. Fraser Hornby. I remember him. He came through at Everton. He got a few little games in the... would have been the Europa League, wasn't it, when Everton were in that a few years ago. He's gone away and played abroad. He's playing... he's been playing all over the place in Europe. But is he set for a return to England? We'll see. Yeah, I think they're the main ones on your list. So have a little look at Alex's striker list. See what you think about that. I know how much work goes into it, how much football you watch. And you're going to do a few more for us, aren't you? You're going to pick out some midfielders, some potential Burgess replacements. If Axel goes, you might have a little look at some right backs. Yeah, you're doing a bit more of a deep dive for us, aren't you, as the summer goes on?
Absolutely. And I can tell you exactly when I started the work on this, really started to come into place in a hotel lobby at Bournemouth away. Remember when we were waiting to be let in for ages because they had some sort of technical issue. We were all sat in the lobby downstairs. I was getting all the names. I'd kind of put in my notes app and putting them onto one big document. So there you go. Yeah. Throwback to that one. That was a fun trip. Another little rumoury bit to kind of wrap up that side of things. Not a player, though. Kieran McKenna. And you've done a big piece on this one because Kieran McKenna has been linked with the Brentford vacancy. So dominoes have fallen and Thomas Frank has taken over at Tottenham. Ange Postecoglou got sacked after winning the Europa League because that's kind of Spursy, isn't it, I suppose. And Thomas Frank's in, so that's a interesting appointment, but it means that there is a vacancy at Brentford, a vacancy that has not yet been filled. And even before Thomas Frank officially left Brentford, it was quite widely reported that Kieran McKenna was on the Bees shortlist as a potential managerial target. That has still been stepped up and it's still been reported at the moment that he is someone that Brentford admire. Some of the bookies had McKenna as the favourite after the announcement was made. He's not anymore. It is another figure who Ipswich fans, well, definitely those of a certain generation will know, in Keith Andrews, who is now very heavily reported to be the man that Brentford will appoint. He is there as a set-piece coach. He's been at Sheffield United before in a coaching role. He's yet to manage a football club, full stop. So this would be his first one getting thrown in at Premier League level. Brentford do like an internal appointment. They've done it before. McKenna now no longer the favourite, and there are reports that there's kind of advanced talks. I know the Independent have said that, that Andrews has been looking at picking some of his coaching staff for his role. Nothing is done. We don't know what the situation is with Andrews, with McKenna, etc. But you've had a look into this one. What are your thoughts on the situation as a whole and ideally avoiding another saga with McKenna like the one we had last summer?
Yeah, Keith Andrews, first of all. I remember him coming in on loan in the Paul Jewell era. It was very early on when I first started covering Ipswich and he was on loan from Blackburn, I want to say. And he came in and he had a really prolific spell of scoring goals from central midfield, and I think it would have been around the time of that crazy 5-3 game at Barnsley, but I digress. What can we say about this Brentford situation? It feels different to last summer, is the first thing I would say, where it was a lot firmer in terms of he is the absolute number one choice for Brighton, and the strength of those reports was strong. And then, you know, Chelsea also have him high on their list, and Manchester United would look to him if there was a vacancy, which ultimately there wasn't. This time around, it doesn't quite feel the same strength of that report. The reports that have been out there is that he is on a three-man shortlist, but never have we seen anything that says Brentford are going to go all out to get Kieran McKenna and he's their number one man. Correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think there's been any kind of reports of that nature thus far. I think some of the concern then came from bookies' odds. At one stage, you know, when Frank was appointed and the vacancy became vacant, Kieran was favourite for a spell. We do always have to remind people that bookmakers' odds can be changed by a handful of bets. If you or I went out and sometimes went and stuck as little as a tenner on something, bookmakers panic. They think there might be some inside info at play, and they shorten the odds considerably to sort of protect themselves. So, odds tumbling aren't always a sign of things happening. I think it was Friday afternoon, all of a sudden, Keith Andrews tumbled to real odds on favourite. I think he was 9-1 on with some bookmakers, which suggests a pretty heavy flurry of bets, which when it gets to that level, maybe suggests that something is at play. But here we are now, Tuesday lunchtime, and it's all quiet on the Brentford front at the moment. So would be a big gamble for them to give Keith Andrews his first ever full managerial job in the Premier League. But they've got precedent before. I think they would have, by all accounts, would have promoted Justin Cochrane from assistant manager, but he's chosen to follow Thomas Frank to Tottenham. Thomas Frank, if you remember, was an assistant manager that got promoted himself. He was working under Dean Smith when they gave him the job. So that is probably part of their model and something that they're considering. Let's hope it goes down that route, because I've seen a few people sort of going, you know, I think one of our posts on social media was sort of, are you worried? And a lot of, I've seen a surprising number of people saying almost like, oh, I'm not bothered. He's failed in the Premier League. Maybe it's time to move on. I'd be absolutely gutted if Kieran McKenna left. We've talked about the blow of certain players leaving. That would be a hell of a blow for Ipswich to have to go and find a manager of his stature. The show would go on, of course, and I'm sure Mark Ashton would have his targets in place. He's always prepared. I know he was last summer, so I'd be fascinated to see what route Ipswich would go down if it came to that, whether they would go for something a bit more tried and tested and just get back into the Premier League, or whether they would go down the sort of Mark Ashton model of giving managers their first chance or an early chance and trying to repeat that again. I hope we don't have to find out, Alex. As we sit here at the moment, I'm hopeful that this one is going to all blow over. But you never know. Things can change very quickly in football.
You never know, but personally, I'd upgrade hopeful to confident. And those are famous last words and could get clipped up. But I've said it on Twitter before, I would be pretty surprised if Kieran McKenna was not in the dugout for the opening day of the season. Whatever game that'll be, because we'll find out next week and we'll bring you a podcast talking about some of those games soon.
Brentford isn't Brighton, is it, last summer? Mm. And I don't mean that disrespectfully to Brentford. They have done, as a football club, their journey has been absolutely outstanding from where they were to where they've been. And this will be season number 5 in the Premier League. Their data system, you know, a bit like Brighton's, is lauded, with Matthew Benham being involved in smart odds and data. They've been ahead of the curve with data analysis. But they feel like a club that it could go one of two ways for them. Have they hit a bit of a glass ceiling now, Brentford, in terms of, you know, on the cusp of European football last year? And Mbeumo's probably going to go this summer. Visser in the last year of his contract. I think there's some interest in Nathan Collins. I'm sure Thomas Frank will come and look for some of his former players. Look, they sold Tony last year and they managed to cope and move on. But at some stage, and we've seen it, clubs have been established. We go, right, they're established in the Premier League now. Burnley, Charlton going further back, clubs that you think, yep, they're in now. And then it only takes sort of one bad transfer window, one bad season, manager leaving, not getting the replacement right. Could they be one that are more likely to go backwards than forwards? Possibly. And Kieran McKenna would have to kind of take that into account in that if he were to be offered, is he got more chance of getting Ipswich back up and keeping them up and progressing than he would have of the risk of taking Brentford backwards. They're big old boots to fill, Thomas Frank. And we've seen it at other football clubs. If a manager leaves on a high, you know, he might sense that he's taken them as far as he can. We saw it was, you know, Sir Alex Ferguson's retirement at Manchester United. I think he sensed that that team was coming towards its natural end and that was a good time to get out. And it can become almost an impossible job to follow on. So Kieran McKenna will back himself wherever he goes, whether it's to stay at Ipswich or whether it's to go elsewhere. Of course he will. But if it was me, I think there's more than enough reasons to just looking at it coldly, objectively, taking all the emotion out of it, stay at Ipswich, get them back up. Still a lot of unfinished business at this football club. So, that's where I'm at with it.
You tip Brentford to, I think, struggle. Did you have them to go down?
Did last year, and I had them. I think I did have them in my bottom three because I was desperately looking for one club that Ipswich could finish above, I wondered post Tony whether they might be one that, you know, gets drawn into it. But they've got the new stadium, of course, but it's what, 17,000, hasn't got the history, the fan base that Ipswich has. They're still building a lot of that over time. Training ground's a bit of a temporary setup, although albeit a very impressive one at the moment. So there's a lot. Kieran McKenna's got his fingerprints all over everything at Ipswich at the moment. He's choosing what the new training ground is going to look like. Let's not forget, Ipswich gave him a chunky old contract last summer, made him one of the Premier League's best paid managers. And yes, I'm sure he will have had a pay cut along with the players going down, but I don't think Brentford are a team that can come in and blow things out the water financially as well. And probably budget wise, I know they're going to get a decent bit of money coming in for players, but, you know, I've seen various league tables that have Brentford only one place above Ipswich in terms of wage budget last summer. So that speaks of a club that's punching above its weight, and all power to them for that. But there's always a risk that, you know, that catches up with you at some point. And I know Kieran's had chances to go to Palace, to go to Brighton. And, you know, he might look at Palace winning the cup and Brighton being what they are at the moment and think, what if? But I don't think Brentford are at the level of those two clubs. And it always sounds like it's not with respect when you say that. But I just don't think it's as appealing as some of the other opportunities that have come and gone for him.
Yeah, well, your prediction could have been worse because Mark had Nottingham Forest going down. So there you go. Football never stops. We touched on that right at the start. And there's football going on now. There's football coming up. We've just had a friendly announced. Aberdeen, we're going off to Aberdeen, or at least you're going off to Aberdeen. Pittodrie away Friday night. What's the date for that again? Can you remind me?
That is Friday, July the 25th. So fresh from the Austrian training camp, Ipswich will have a week in Austria, rounded off with the game in Linz at the end of that, which we'll all be out there. You are in Ross for on the Saturday, then back to Suffolk and then up to Scotland on the Friday night for Aberdeen. Fresh from finishing fifth in the SPL and also claiming the Scottish Cup, beat Celtic on penalties. Fantastic scenes on the streets of Aberdeen last month. yeah, that should be fun. I'll be up there for that one. And more preseason games to come, I would assume. They're the only two that have been announced so far. Yeah, the preseason approach will be interesting. I think if you remember going into the championship season, we went up to Preston away, didn't we, at one stage?
That was 2 days after going to Vienna as well. We went to Preston, yeah. That was pretty I mean, the fixtures we had then were unbelievable.
It was a busy summer, wasn't it? And I think the logic behind that was get prepared for the championship because the championship's busy. There's a lot of travel. There's a lot of midweek games. And the preseason schedule reflected that and ultimately stood them in really good stead for what was ahead. Last summer was a lot quieter. And maybe that was the logistics of not knowing they were going to get promoted till quite late. So it was quite hard to get things in the diary and line up the appropriate level of opposition. But last summer was a bit underwhelming in terms of the schedule, wasn't it? They went to Austria and played Shakhtar Donetsk, but that was kind of behind closed doors. Wasn't a ton of games from memory.
Went to Austria and Germany. Yeah, we had that. We had all the situation with the Borussia Mönchengladbach game, which I think was Town just being in a position where there were so many injuries and the squad was stretched, where they had to field the under-21s and annoyed a lot of Germans in the process in that game in Munich, and then went to Austria and played Hoffenheim in the rain and then in the sun, and then it rained again, and I sat on a concrete terrace and wrote my match report. That was fun. And then we had one or two home games? I think we had Dusseldorf as one of them.
Nice.
You covered Nice. That was I think that was the last one before the start.
A bit more
season.
Games than I remember, perhaps. But we'll see what this summer brings, I guess, won't we? But I would imagine they'll try and pack a few more in this year to get them ready physically and mentally for the different rhythm of championship football.
Yeah, and I need it. I'm missing my football. I'm sat here, but there's still things for me to watch because the football continues. And we'll touch briefly. Liam Delap made his Chelsea debut last night. That was kind of cool. He got booked after about 15 seconds for a foul on the defender. Quite a soft.
He was on the bench, right? And he came on.
Yeah, he's came on. I think it was 66 minutes. I think he was booked on 67. And, you know, I've seen a lot of kind of scepticism with Chelsea fans about the signing. I think you've seen it a lot as well, thinking, oh, you know what? Is he the man to take the number 9 shirt? I think he was really good from what I saw of him last night. Got a well worked assist. We're not going to be talking about Liam Delap week in, week out, but he's still one that I'm sure we and a lot of Town fans will be watching both the Club World Cup and just seeing how he gets on from time to time in the Premier League and in the Champions League, because he's done a lot for Ipswich and it's good to see. Well, hopefully he'll thrive at Chelsea and get a big move and win the Ballon d'Or and the Town get all of those fees to come.
Still adapting to seeing sort of Liam Delap doing interviews for Chelsea and then seeing last night, you know, Liam Delap came on and produced an exciting cameo on his, do we call this a debut? I guess it is a competitive debut, isn't it? Who were they playing? Remind me.
LAFC of LAFC. Major League Soccer.
It's been a while since we've seen Ipswich players. It's been a rarity over a prolonged period for Ipswich players to go on to bigger and better things. And so I guess we should celebrate that, really, for that to have returned. But it does feel strange seeing him do it for another team at the moment.
Amari Hutchinson, another one who we're watching, not in an Ipswich shirt, but he's not moved away. Don't worry, he's playing for England under 21 at Euro under 21. He's had a couple of appearances. He started the first game, and I now cannot remember who played, so I'm going to need to get it up again. But there, here we go. He started against Czechia. That was a 3-1 win for England. He was exceptional in that game. He played off the left and kind of occupied these little pockets where he'd turn and run, and that created the first goal. We've seen him do it a lot for Ipswich. That's something that Lee Carsley pointed out. That's a really
exciting good. Fight. How good was he, Alex? You watched that game, and I saw a hell of a lot of praise coming his way. Mm. Was he impressive?
Really good. I mean, considering he didn't actually have a goal and assist there, he was creating chances. He had a really good shot that was saved. just involved in so much. I think he played, I think it was about 77 minutes or so. 78, there you go, I was close. Really, really strong performance from him. And we haven't seen much of him in that left-sided role, at least in the Premier League. I don't know if he's started a game there, but he's kind of got that slot under Carsley. Started in that first game against Czechia. Joe Hart on commentary was full of praise for him. Lee Carsley wants him to be more selfish, which I quite like. It's a little bit different. Didn't start then against Slovenia. I'm not going to get Slovenia and Slovakia confused. Came off the bench from that one. It finished 0-0. It was a little bit of a rubbish game. England had 20 shots, but only three of them on target. So everything for England comes down to this crunch clash against Germany. They probably will go through to the quarterfinals. If they beat Germany, they will finish top. If they don't, then they're looking at second. Don't think they'll finish third due to the goal difference advantage over Slovenia. If they finish second, it looks like it'll be Spain in the quarterfinals, which will be a rematch of the 2023 final, the one that England won. So that would be one spicy meatball. But really intrigued to see how Mari gets on. He was asked about his future on, whenever the first game was against against Czechia.
Czech Republic in old money.
Czech Republic, yeah, that's the one. We can't call them that anymore, though. We'll be sued. He played that game, started well, was asked about his future afterwards, played it quite straight back. I'm just focused on Euro under 21. Some reports coming out saying that Ipswich are expecting to keep him despite the relegation release clause that's been widely reported. And I think he'll stay as well. So, one to watch. Still got a few weeks left of this tournament. Think that might take him out of some of the early preseason games because he needs a break. Players can't play all year round, can they? Should we finish with a little bit of interesting news? I've got a kind of a question that'll put you on the spot here. This hasn't been confirmed. Just seen this while we've been recording. Well, and it's elsewhere in the Championship. Sheffield United, they've not done it yet, but they are going to, now reported by lots of different outlets, sack Chris Wilder. My hot take after Town's relegation was confirmed, we knew Sheffield United weren't going up, was that Chris Wilder would be the pantomime villain for Ipswich next season. It looks like he's not going to be in the Championship, or at least not with Sheffield United next season. What does that do for a potential promotion race? Because you'd imagine that Blades would be right in that mix, and losing someone voluntarily like Chris Wilder would be quite a big blow, but they're going to sack him by the looks of it.
How many points did they get in the end? Did they get into the 90s?
They were definitely in the 90s.
With a deduction in there as well, wasn't it? So it was a hell of a points total.
90.
Tailed right off at the end, under pressure, lost in the playoffs. And then the manager goes. I think I've seen sort of from reports it's as much to do with maybe a bit of a head loss from him towards the end of the season. I didn't follow it that closely, but I think he was starting to get sort of a bit impassioned with some of his post-matches and things like that, having a go at opposition and various different things. Certainly creates a bit of a managerial merry-go-round, doesn't it? How many vacancies is there at play at this given time? I lose track of who's appointed.
So, Championship-wise, Sheffield United would have a vacancy. Gary O'Neill, I've seen, is the favourite for that one. Bristol City have a vacancy. They are appointing, I can't remember who it is, but he used to manage Barnsley and has just been sacked by Cologne. Middlesbrough, that's the one. I think it's him. I think he's the one who's going to be the new Bristol City boss from what I've seen. Middlesbrough have a vacancy. That's Rob Edwards is the favourite for that one. QPR don't by the letter of the law, but with a manager on gardening leave, I would imagine that they will do quite soon. I think that's it, he says. Okay. Quite a few different bits coming in and out. We might not be done. Who knows? There might be a few more changes, and that's all after a new manager at Norwich. We've had a new manager at Watford. We've had a new manager at Hull as well.
West Brom.
Obviously, a new manager. West Brom have appointed Ryan Mason, so he's come in there. New manager at Southampton, of course. A new manager at Leicester will be expected. Crazy, isn't it? A lot of chopping and changing. And I think, kind of going back to the McKenna point a bit, having consistency in a league that is just chaos would be really good for Ipswich.
Yeah, well, Ashton's always said it. Stability is the superpower. It has been during the back-to-back promotions, and hopefully it can be next season. You know, touch wood. Kieran McKenna stays. I know we're in this little nether zone or where people are getting a bit twitchy about inverted commas and mass exodus, which I think is probably a little bit sort of over panicky at the moment. It's Delap, it's Burgess, it's possibly Axel. Loan players who you've kind of always factor in anyway. But at least that's getting done early. Mm. And then hopefully Ipswich can, you know, things will start to hot up. Hopefully some business can be done early. Everything was very late in the day last summer. There were still quite a lot of players arriving on the eve of the season after the first few games. Pre-season always gives you a really solid foundation. And if people like, I mean, Jack Clark arrived quite late, Dar O'Shea, there was a few last year, and I think they'll all be better for, you know, a year inside the club, a year knowing McKenna, knowing the culture, and then having a proper pre-season altogether. There's still the core of that squad there that has got some real top-end championship players. So let's not get too panicked about some of the exits at the moment. And, hopefully we'll be getting beyond the exit chat and we'll be getting stuck into the arrivals chat pretty soon.
Yeah, and Chiu Ogbene, he'll be like a new signing as well. Excited to see him. Stu, any further business before we wrap up?
No further business. No other business.
No further business. We've covered absolutely everything. We were going to do a short podcast. It's been 70 minutes. That just about sums up how this works every single week. Hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be back next week. Stardust Spirits, of course. I was getting onto that. Don't worry. We'll be back next week, though, to talk about the fixtures. They'll be out next Thursday. Lots of excitement around those. Don't forget, as Stu says, Stardust Spirits, use the code 20. No, not even 20. Use the code, get this right, KOA for 20% off all of your drinking needs. That sounded worse when it came out that way. But there's so many good bits on there. Go check it out. You know my favorite. Go and get some of it. So much on there. Go have a look. We'll see you next time talking about the fixtures, talking about all the latest rumours and all the big news as we build up again and again and again to the new championship season. We'll see you then.
Just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.